Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Christopher Kaler, and hopefully we will be talking to him in a minute. Excuse me.
Hello there.
Hello, Christopher, this is Mac.
How are you doing?
Okay, and how are you doing?
Oh, I'm unwinding. It's been a hectic day.
Yeah, I can emphasize with that. I just got in shortly before I caught you. And you can hear me all
again?
Right. What's that?
I thought, should we start this again?
No, I think we're okay. Because you can hear me all right, is that correct?
I don't know. I never talked to you on the phone before, but I'm assuming it's you, so I'll say yeah.
You're funny. Okay, and I can hear you all right. So we should be on the air, so we should be good to go.
Okay.
I'm just going to start right in. So when did you realize that you wanted to get into the filmmaking business?
Let's see. I did the usual, made stop-motion movies and stuff when I was a kid. And then basically did the whole ninjas and monsters kind of thing with my friends as we got older, and maybe, I don't know, like around high school or so. But that doesn't attract the girls, so then I went into music and started playing guitars and stuff and did that for many years and kind of went back into the film thing maybe about 20 years ago.
Because
It's much easier than having to put up with egotistical bandmates because they're the worst people ever.
I've heard that from a few people. I've got a really good friend that has a...
True.
I'm sorry, there was an overlap. What did you just say?
I said it's all very true.
Yeah. Okay, now, you've worn many, many hats in your filmmaking career. So do you have a favorite, and is there one that you find especially challenging?
I like actually being the camera guy, because basically I don't do any kind of storyboards whatsoever, since I usually do my own editing and whatnot. So there's nothing really to show anybody else. So a lot of that is just pretty much made up on the spot, on the fly, and it tends to be a bit more creative that way, I think.
Hmm.
And just I can kind of edit the scene together in my head as I'm shooting it, which, of course, usually adds to a lot of chaos for my actors because they can't stand it. But the results are pretty good, I think, I hope.
Is
yeah, definitely the camera stuff.
Good. Yeah, I can see where that would be something that people would like, because I like working cameras, but you know, not everybody does. Is there anything that you find more challenging than something else as far as the different hats?
Typing up the scripts is always the worst for me. I don't mind writing the stories and whatnot, but physically typing is just like kryptonite to me. And everybody will vouch who's ever been in any of my movies, because they're getting the scenes like on the day of it. And I explain what the scene is like. Yeah, but Chris, if we don't have the dialogue, this doesn't mean anything. I just drag my feet so much on typing because I hate physically typing. It's great, but of course, I'll be on the computer all day and it's not a problem. But as soon as I have to start typing like scenes together, dialogue, it's like, oh, this is the worst. But of course, I mean, I'll waste an afternoon like on eBay just looking up stupid random things, and no problem typing that up. But it's like, no, that's because it doesn't mean anything to anybody.
Well, why don't you tell us about the Short Bus to Insanity Short Film Festival and how that all
got
started?
A couple years ago, my partner in crime, Claire Fluff Llewellyn, and I were talking about doing a film festival, because, I mean, there was plenty of them going around here, but they're usually run by, like, the same cliques of people, and you kind of notice after a while that somehow all these people in these cliques keep winning all the best film awards and all this stuff, so it's a little bit biased, a little bit shady, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I was doing the math on it one night and stuff, and I was like, well, let's find another theater that we could rent out, and we got one out in Des Plaines, Illinois, which is maybe about 40 minutes northwest of Chicago. And it was for, I don't know, it was like 2 hours or 3 hours, but it was reasonably priced. And, you know, I did the math on it. Basically, it came out to like $1 a minute. So we said, hey, you know what, we'll open the fest up to anybody who wants to play their film there and stuff. And basically the entrance fee is $1 a minute. So if you had a 20-minute movie, it was $20, you know.
Wow.
A lot of these a lot of times the stuff, for a short film, it's like a set fee for, I don't know, $10, $15, $20, $30 or whatever. But then a feature is like $50, $60, and it didn't make much sense, you know, for some guy who had a really long short movie to pay the same amount as a guy who did maybe like a 3-minute animated film, you know?
Right.
So we did the math on that, and then that all worked out, and everybody loved that and came out to it. And basically, I think we just charged tickets at the door or whatever. And that went to pay. We had little trophies that were buses because it was supposed to be the short bus to Insanity Film Fest. So I found trophies that were buses. And basically, I think we lost like $3 on the entire event because the one film that like pretty much swept in every category, it was made in Portugal. So we had to ship all these awards over to Portugal and it pretty much ate any of the profits. But overall, it was a good time. And everybody was like, oh, that was great, you know, because, I mean, there was no real stipulations on it. Just, hey, pay the dollar a minute and everybody can get their film screened. The only problem was the theater got the city was condemning it or whatever because the city wanted to take it over because it's very close to a casino. They wanted to run, like, a live music venue place out of there. So the city was constantly on the theater owner who didn't have the money to upkeep the place. And I don't know. I think they finally settled this maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, where the city was going to pay to do some of the renovations or whatever, split some of the profits with him, but he was no longer the sole owner of it anymore. So they kind of strong-armed him out of his own theater, which kind of sucks. But I don't think they do any kind of movie events up there anymore, which is a shame.
No, yeah, that is a shame. So does the film festival still exist, just at another venue?
No, we just did it that 1 year. And then basically, because the theaters in Chicago, there was two of them, the patio and the Portage, that everybody would always run for their events. And that was great. But again, there were also ones that were kind of run down and they were having problems with the city and whatnot. And I guess
right.
It was like one guy who inherited both of them from his father, grandfather, something like that. But the place was completely like run down and they were kind of unsafe and everybody was having issues trying to, we're going to have an event because we were supposed to have some other event for Hobo with the Trash Can. We were doing our premiere for that, and we paid up front for the theater and everything, and all the profits were going to the local homeless shelters and whatnot. And then as like the week is before the event, we're finding out that, they're doing screenings of like the new Jurassic Park movie or something. It's like, wait, what the hell is this? We've already got the theater booked. We'll refund you the money. It's like, the money's not the problem, you know? We've already put all this advertising out and everything. So they ended up giving us the other theater at a discount, and it was just a mess. I think they pretty much ripped out the seats from the Portage at this point. They just do, like, live music stuff, like rap stuff, and I don't know. And the patio looks like the last time I was up there, the ceiling was kind of caving in, so that was not in good shape. So I was in the lookout for a new theater. Especially their prices.
Well, I hope you find one.
It would be fun doing it.
So tell us about your podcast, the 42nd Street Drive-In.
Oh, we haven't done that for a while. Just because it became so, there was a whole lot of editing involved in it. We would have to have two guests on each episode. And stuff, and depending on what the show was, like we did like an Ozploitation episode, and we got a guy from Australia, Les Morris, who sat in for that. And trying to sync up the times with him because he's on the other side of the planet. We could actually record the episode and stuff. And then it's always covered with like funky, like 60s and 70s music behind it. And I'd always put all these stupid sound effects in there and stuff. And people either absolutely loved that or they hated that. I was reading on some message board. Or some guy would say, yeah, you know what, they kind of grow on you, though, after a while, because if they weren't there, you'd suddenly miss them. But I mean, the show was pretty popular, and but after a while, it was just trying to put out episodes, and like, all right, you know, trying to sync up with everybody, and kind of took a break from it, and it's been, I don't know, maybe 5 years now. People still ask about that. They ask about the show we did before that was the Blackfoot Lounge. All we covered were 80s slasher movies on there. But I thought 42nd Street was a little bit cooler because, again, it covered different genre movies. And, like, we'd have kung fu movies one episode, or the next would be, like, Nazi exploitation or women in prison or something ridiculous. And so, I mean, it was fun because, I mean, you got to see different movies rather than just all 80s slashers. And basically,
right,
it's like 80s slashers. You can pretty much, I mean, you could count on one hand all like the name famous ones, like Friday the 13th and Halloween and stuff on one hand. But after that, you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. It's like, okay, you know what? We need a new format. We need a new show of something. And then we talked about it. My partner, Sean Hunt, and I. And then that's how we ended up doing all the Grindhouse movies. And he said he wasn't really comfortable with it because it was outside of his knowledge. He was very much an 80s horror guy. But, I mean, he took to it like a fish to water, and the rest is history, I guess. I still have some of the T-shirts I didn't sell.
Well, I'm going to start getting into some of your film work here. That is, if you were done talking. I don't want to assume you were done talking.
Isn't it horrible having to listen to somebody talk about themselves? God, it's such a thankless task.
Let's see, where should I start? Actually, I wanted to start with something else at first, but I think I want to start with Christmas with Billy now.
It's
great. A short, and you were cinematographer, director, actor, editor, sound mixer, writer. And another interesting thing about it is that it has been screened every semester as part of a English class in a college in Arizona since the release in 2009. So tell us about that.
I was surprised to find that out because the woman who played the mother in it, Dawn Schneider, and her soon-to-be ex-husband, they were getting divorced, was Tom Oswald, and he was the man with a gun. I mean, they still got along okay. He was living with his new girlfriend or whatever, and I mean, there was nothing like romantic or whatever between them. But Tom had this crazy jealous girlfriend type who found out that he was in some movie with her and stuff, and I guess she hit the roof. So I ended up, he asked me, could you pull it off of YouTube for a while? And I was like, okay, fine. And this was back in the days of MySpace, and then I got some message from some guy in Arizona saying, hey, you know what, you're the guy who made that movie with the kid in the Christmas one, right? And I was like, yeah. And he said, yeah, we watch this as part of our English course here. Our professor plays this at the start of every semester. And he asked me to find you to see if you could put it back online again for him. And it's like, wow, so somebody's making a college professor is getting paid to show my movie. He's probably describing it all wrong and everything. But it's like, yeah, I haven't made a dime off that, so.
So what,
I'd
what
love
is
to be
the
off
movie about?
Around his wife. Huh?
All right, so what's the movie about? I mean, obviously it's about Christmas with some guy named Billy, but, you know, what's the gist of the movie?
Oh, well, Billy is actually a kid. He's 5 and a half. You have to say 5 and a half when you're a kid. You can't just say 5.
Right.
The movie starts out, and obviously there's some kind of situation going on where there's a guy who's in his house who's got a gun and stuff, and there's police surrounding the place, so obviously this guy is on the run from the law. We never find out why or what the deal is with that, but basically the kid brings the guy back to his humanity again or whatever towards the end of it, and everybody's like, dude, nobody was expecting this from you. We're waiting for the guy to shoot the kid up or some kind of big gunfight or some kind of horror creature or something, and everybody apparently loved that one. It's been called the most depressing holiday movie of all time. From Stephen A. Granger, who's a filmmaker himself.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think Amazon Prime just pulled it too. It's like, great, just when it's the holidays, too, you pulled my one movie that was still making money, or almost making money.
Aww. Well, that,
but it's still on YouTube, on Vimeo.
I'll
probably
start
spamming.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Amazon has a way of doing this. So if you're not making them a whole lot of money to the content creators, and that's kind of a deal breaker for them.
Yeah.
But it's still up for free though on YouTube and Vimeo, so if anybody wants to check that out. because, I mean, who would possibly get more depressed during this year, during the holidays, you know?
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard with everything that's going on in 2020.
Yeah,
so
maybe I should pull that.
Now, in 2012, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I said, of course, but at that rate, that some English professor out in Arizona wouldn't get paid for the semester, so I'd be responsible. So
<That's>
at least
funny.
One of us is making some money off of it.
Yeah. Now, in 2012, you did a short called Lawn Zombies, and that was a winner in the 24-hour film race, the Chicago division in 2012, for best special effects. So
yes,
tell us
and
about
best makeup.
That film.
My buddy Lloyd Miller, he did film school and everything. I didn't do any of that stuff, but I was shooting another movie at the time, so he basically just let me borrow his fancy schmancy HD camera at the time, and he would see it once a year. That's when he would sign us up to do the 24-hour film race. Every year and stuff. And basically he's like, yeah, this is like my visitation right here and stuff. You know, this is how you pay rent on it, because every year you're going to be the guy who's going to end up editing this and doing the sound mixes and the music. And basically all this has to be done in 24 hours because they give you maybe a line of dialogue, a prop, some kind of a premise or something. And then you have 24 hours to shoot and completely edit and sound mix, score, et cetera, the movie, and turn it in within 24 hours in order to not get disqualified. So basically, he had me stuck doing every job possible on this. But we did the special effects thing. I mean, there's a couple, like, zombies get their heads blown off and stuff, and apparently everybody loved that because there's a whole lot of compositing work and stuff. I mean, obviously, we didn't remove anybody's heads in it, but you just have plates and whatnot. So, but it was a goofy movie. I still enjoy it. It's very campy, very like 50s PSA type thing. But again, that's on YouTube as well, I believe. Another one that doesn't make any money. I see the pattern developing here.
Well, in 2014, you did not. I believe you're uncredited, but you were in the movie Divergent. So tell us about working on that.
Oh, there's a trailer, too. let's see. Not much really to say about that. They made us wear these really ridiculous, uncomfortable outfits. but the background fancy. They were made out of, like the tweed or something. But I mean, there were these horribly itchy things, and it was just, like, completely hotter than hell out. But, you know, they basically would cast everybody into the factions or whatever it is in the book. I don't know. My niece was huge on it. I didn't know anything about it. But they had, like, these guys who were, like, these punk rocker, like, security types or whatever. And they're all kind of younger because I don't think they live very long in this Divergent world. And they had, like, these older hippie kind of guys who did all the farm work and stuff. And I sent them my picture, and they said, hey, you know, we want to put you in this, I can't think of it. No, the Dauntless faction, the punk rock security guards. It's like, oh, hey, fantastic. That sounds pretty cool. And then I didn't hear back from them. And then I heard back, hey, we want to put you in these other guys, the farmer guys. So I was like, oh, all right, that makes more sense because I have the long-haired beard, so I'm kind of hippie-ish looking. And then they got back to me again, no, we're definitely putting you back in the Dauntless thing. And it's like, you have seen my picture, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, absolutely, you know. You're just, your headshot looks so badass, but we want to put you with them. So just to show off my bad attitude, they gave me a French hair braid, so I look like a bridesmaid at a wedding or something. And, like, slapped some fake tattoos on my neck. And it's like, okay, the hair thing was kind of uncalled for, but hey. A gig is a gig, you know?
Yeah, job's a job, I guess.
Well, the movie apparently is supposed to be serious. Usually when they have a costume picked out for me, it's for shits and giggles, you know? It's never... you're gonna play the main cowboy guy. It's like, no, I had to play like the town drunk guy in a Western or something, you know? I get that a lot.
In 2017, you did Leaf Blower Massacre 2. You cinematographer, actor, editor, composer, special effects. Well, tell us about that one.
Oh, that was a nightmare. Originally, I was asked to come on to do the special effects for it, and all right, fine, I agreed. That was all right. Hey, you know, Chris, I got a part like as a biker guy there. You want to do that? Hey, sure, no problem. Then I get a call one night when they're supposed to be shooting. He said, "Oh, you know what? My camera guy ended up quitting on me. Can you come film the rest of it?" Huh? Yeah, sure, I guess. Not knowing that his camera guy was also the editor, so I was like, "Oh, now I'm straddled with that." And oh, then suddenly, oh, he doesn't have anybody to do the music or whatever. And I think there was like one scene that was left to be edited. And I moved out to New Mexico for 6 months. And the only scene that had to be edited, everything else was done and in place and time-coded and whatnot, was there was a concert scene. And since there's a band on stage playing music, you don't have to find anybody to do the music for it. So this came and went, and I got back to Chicago. No, it still doesn't have music for it. So, of course, I end up doing that, too, and then find out that he's set up some premiere thing or whatever. So, you know, you haven't even looked at this yet. Nothing has been done on this. And then to find out that some other guy that he was saying could be the composer on it was apparently complaining that he wasn't in the credits and his music wasn't used or whatever, but his music was like three notes, you know, and it was just repetitive. It's like, this guy didn't even watch the movie? I don't think so. But after that, it's like, okay, you know, I'm pretty much done with this movie. And the director, I'm using the term very loosely now, said, "Oh, yeah, you know, do you have the edit things or whatever?" It's like, well, what did you do that for? "Oh, no, for the DVDs." It's like, that's not for the DVDs, whatever. And I was like, you know what, I'm done with this movie. So it turns out what they were trying to do is replace the music that I had put in there originally for it and stuff. So this other guy could have it because I guess he complained up a storm. It's like, oh. So I've got to see the DVD version that actually got released without my music in it. They tried to re-edit it and stuff, and they screwed up the sound, and it was just a train wreck. And just everything about that movie was horrible. Except that I got a nice flat screen TV out of my one-time payment for working on it. So, and I still have the TV, so that's the only good thing that came out of that. Well, maybe not.
No.
Well, then I got the idea. It's like, hey, I should do my own slasher movie type thing. And, you know, I've got all this music now left over. And then basically I started putting it towards my current feature, Steal Your Face. And I was like, well, I don't want to do an 80s homage thing because everybody seems to be doing that. So I decided to make a giallo, and it's much more fun, except that the COVID thing is keeps putting the movie on hold over shooting. So it's like, yeah, it's maybe about 3/4 of the way there, but it's all very stop and go. So
well,
hopefully this spring.
Oh, yeah, because I was just going to say, since you already mentioned it, you might as well talk about it as much as you can say about it, like what's a synopsis of it and, you know, how are things going? I mean, you just mentioned a little bit how it's going, but you can go into more detail because we've got 35 minutes, so take your time.
I talk really fast. I can talk a lot, Max, so get your seatbelt on. Let's see. Steal Your Face is basically what came out of me being really disappointed with that Leaf Blower Massacre 2 movie. My protagonist, Kaylee Williams, she's a photographer in it, and she's trying to get a book deal because she's got this amazing portfolio of photography she's done. But the company says, oh, you know what, it feels like it needs something more to end this on, da-da-da. So she wants to go back. The whole book is on Africa, all her pictures and whatnot. So she wants to go back there because there's this annual celebration they do in Kenya and stuff. So she's hitting her publisher up for it, said, hey, or her manager up, I'm sorry. Said, hey, you know, can you lend me the money? He's like, you know what, I'm in the same boat with you on this. You know, I can't do it. So she's like, if anything at all comes up, you know, just let me know because I'm kind of desperate because I really need to get this in order to get this publishing deal. So sure enough, next day he calls up, said, hey, you know what, I got a gig for you and stuff. And she's like, oh, you know, it's going to take too long. It's like, no, they'll pay you cash, $1,500 up front. And so she's like, what, what, what? So, of course, she goes out there, agrees to do this with this horribly rude woman that she meets with for this and stuff. But, of course, this woman flashes the cash to her. Oh, sure, no questions asked, takes the gig. And it turns out it's this really sleazy kind of pornographic shoot thing that she's taking pictures of. But, hey, she buckles down. She's already spent the money, too. To buy her ticket. As soon as she got that, she was out the door, got that. And then she gets phone called by the guy who is the actual guy who hired her for this. And he's this horrible, horrible misogynist. Just, he's like the creepiest character you'll ever see on screen, I hope. And it was pulled off beautifully by Greg Johnson, who is giggly the first time he saw the script for his character. He's like, you do realize everybody's going to hate you for this, right? It's like, why? He's like, this is horrible dialogue, this guy's saying. It's like, yeah, but I'm not the one saying it on screen. You are. He's like, screw that. So anyway, so she is now stuck having to do this gig, and she takes the pictures. She returns them to this woman, her envoy? I don't know. What would you say? Her in-between? I don't know, something like that. And stuff. It basically tells you, oh, you're a bitch, da da da, I never want to see you again, nothing to do with you. And then all the models start getting bumped off one by one from they were in the shoot. And she's obviously a suspect in this, and the detectives are trying to piece apart who the killer is. And again, everybody in this movie is just pretty much like a terrible human being. So everyone's kind of a suspect, which I thought was kind of fun.
Wow.
But the person at the end who's the killer and stuff will be a twist and why they're the killer and stuff. And it's like, okay, nobody's going to see it coming. And then I'm sure everyone who gets the DVD will replay it again and say, okay, here's all the clues right here. All right. They pick up on it and then it's no fun anymore. So. Or they could always listen to me babble out of the director's commentary too, but that's not fun for anybody. Again, who wants to listen to them talk about themselves?
Well, evidently a lot of people like it from how some people love to hear the commentaries on films. I mean, I don't mind hearing that stuff by itself, but I don't want that over the movie. If I want to watch the movie, I want to watch the movie. I don't want to listen to some person talk about what they did on the movie while the movie's playing. I never got that.
Well, I get it. I some classic movies like The Godfather and whatnot. You know, when you listen to like Francis Ford Coppola talking about this and saying, "Oh yeah, I learned suspense from George Lucas, who said always use like this extra footage and stuff. You know, before the cameras come, for the actors walk into the set or whatever. And this way, when somebody hears something, you can cut to this and suspense. Where is this person at? And it's pretty much like the ending of Halloween when Michael Myers gets shot and he's out there on the lawn and Loomis comes out there and looks, and he's not there. And then it's like all these cuts of the empty house in the inside. It's like, where is he hiding now? Nobody knows. And it's like, oh, I thought that was useful information. I try to employ stuff like that in my shoots. And then the flip side of that is that you always hear people who just talk about what they did for the afternoon or whatever. It's like, what does this have to do with the movie you guys are talking about? My worst thing is I always get stuck on people's names for some reason when I'm trying to do it in real time, and I forget names left and right, and then I'm just, oh, and then I'll remember like minutes later, and I'm suddenly trying to do catch up on the commentary. It's painful.
Yeah, well, my thing is if I want to listen to the commentary, which, like I said, I like listening to them talk about stuff, but if it's during the movie, I don't like that, because if I have the movie on, I want to watch the movie. So if they want to do the commentary in a different way, which a lot of them have, and that, like more of a BTR thing, BTS thing, and for those that don't know, that stands for behind the scenes, where they're talking about, okay, well, we did this. And like what you said about the scene in Halloween, this is what we did in the scene in Halloween, and then show that scene as you're talking about it, and then when you go to something else, then you can show that scene. Why do you have to put it over a movie? That's dumb.
I don't know.
To
people
me.
Are, man. Okay, but there is one commentary that you have to listen to. It's for Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger and John Milos. John Milos? How do you say it? I don't know. But it's like the funniest damn thing you'll ever hear in your life. Just Arnold Schwarzenegger gets all the information about the scenes wrong and everything. And yeah, it's just funny as hell. It's, oh, look at me. Oh, this is the scene where blah, blah, blah. Because I'm getting the steel now because it symbolizes this and stuff. And then the director's like, no, that's not what that means at all. It means this. And he's like, yes, exactly. It's like he doesn't listen to anything anyone else is saying. It just doesn't matter what you say, you disagree, and he's just exactly. The whole time, it's the funniest thing you'll ever hear. It's not supposed to be, but that's what makes it. Because they're not self-aware, you know?
Well, that's when things are funny-er, when they're not supposed to be. Like those movies that they're supposed to be scary or serious or whatever, and you're sitting there laughing your butt off. that's why they're funny, because they're supposed to be serious. And I've seen a few of those lately where it's supposed to be real serious, but yet there's just something about it where it's done bad or the acting's bad, and you just can't help but laugh at it.
Oh, the Room comes to mind immediately. A lot of the Neil Breen, his films. So, again, I give the guy a lot of respect because he goes out and he makes these movies. At the same time, though, they're almost always like very similar plots and devices and whatnot. So it doesn't really change much, except it's like, how good or bad is it going to be? And again, it's in the eye of the beholder, you know? Oh, Veronica,
yeah.
That's another one that was, I don't know if you saw that one or not, but oh, that's another one.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you thinking? And it's like, it's such a horrible movie, but I found.
Well, the good thing about it when they're funny, because if they're bad, but they're funny because they're bad, well, then at least they've got something going for them. At least I was able to have a good time laughing instead of sitting there going, oh, this is so boring that I'm getting mad, because I've had those too where it's like absolutely nothing happens in the film except people going, yuck, 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 yuck.
Well, good. It's so bad, it's good because it becomes entertaining for all the wrong reasons. So
right.
I mean, I'm not. I shot a movie like that a couple of years ago called Vampire Winter, and the guy who wrote it, because I was moving to North Carolina at the time, and my cohort Sean from the podcast, it said, "Hey, I know a guy. He's looking for a director and stuff. You know, if you're interested." It's a vampire movie. It was like based like on. Like the Real Housewives or something, but they were vampires or some ridiculous, I don't know what it was. And it sounded like this guy didn't have a clue of what he was doing. And I'd say that when we were shooting this, he had no clue of what he was doing. But, you know, I talked to them and said, I'm going to come down to North Carolina. I'll be there probably for a year or so maybe. And he wanted, he's looking for a director or producer. And then he was saying, actually, I'm looking for a producer. I decided I'm going to direct it myself. Oh, okay. Well, good luck with that. But you know what? I don't really do producer work because if I could do that, I'd have my own movies going on rather than struggling to constantly come up with locations or keeping actors around long enough to finish the movie. But sure, it turns out somebody was a sucker enough to give this guy money to do this. And the first day on the shoot, it's supposed to be this vampire movie. And the guy is meeting his ex-wife, who's now a vampire. And they're at some swanky restaurant or whatnot. And the first day of filming, we're on Biscayne Island, just south of Miami. And these windows are like the size of like somebody's garage in this place. And the sun is coming up. So there was sunlight pouring in from every like 3 or 4 feet and stuff. It's like, how am I supposed to film a vampire with all the sunlight coming in here, you know? And the guys who put up the money and stuff, they're like, hey, you know, we wanted to meet you and stuff, you know? And I'm like, you know, I got work cut out for me and stuff. You know, can we talk later? No, sure, you know, do what you do. Do what you got to do. And I'm thinking, okay, so this writer guy who's decided that he's now directing it, either he's really testing me or he has no idea what he is doing in any life, shape, or form. And it didn't take long to figure out that he had no idea, because the second scene was supposed to be a night scene as well. No, it was supposed to, was it? Yeah. But we get to the second location with somebody's house, and there, of course, there's some vampire woman taking her clothes off and she's attacking the guy and all that nonsense. And, you know, he said, Chris, you take care of the camera angles and the lighting and the blocking and the actor's dialogue and blah, blah, blah. I'll direct the sexy moves. And I was just like, what the hell are you talking about? Directing the sexy moves? That doesn't even make any sense, dude. This would be like Steven Spielberg showing up on the set of his movie and saying, here, you take care of the screaming orphans and the planes flying overhead and the tanks coming in, and I'll direct the walking scenes. It's like, oh, my God, this guy has no clue. And this was becoming more and more apparent, like over like the next day or so. And then basically he was no longer allowed to direct the movie, the producers decided. So it was handed over to me. But the problem was he was the writer. So, I mean, he was still contracted that he had to be there. And this, and he was just, he's the worst. He was a pain in the ass and stuff. But he kept thinking that this was like somehow some sexy horror masterpiece. And I was telling the producers, like, no, you know what? Everybody's playing it straight. You play this up for the camp value and stuff, and you'll make $1 zillion off this. If you try listening to this guy, nothing is going to happen. So, of course, this nonsense went back and forth. Finished the shoot, like, in, I think it was 10 days or something. I was much more virile when I was younger. And it was all done with stuff. And I was still signed on to be the editor for this. Well, it turns out, yeah, but this, he's still in his contract. He had creative control over it and stuff. And I said, I'm not answering to this guy in any way, shape, or form. He's just absolutely clueless. So basically, the producers and his lawyers had to keep going back and forth between me and him and on all this. And what he wanted to do, of course, was make sure that he didn't have any of the credits on the movie, because he still wanted to list himself as being the director on there for whatever the hell reason. It's like, okay, the whole thing is just kind of a nonsensical mess at this point, but hey, you know. But I still got the director's credit for it on IMDb. The movie, of course, has never been released. I still have a copy of it on a dead hard drive. I'm like talking to people that I've met on that movie, and this was years and years ago. It's like, you know what, I got to get that hard drive fixed one of these days just to get the damn movie off of there. And it's like, oh, I mean, it was just so cheesy and stuff, but this guy cannot see it that way. Just everything just had to be, it's more sexy. It has to be more sexy. This was like his line of direction all the time to the girls. Oh, do it more sexy, you know? And it's like, oh, Jesus, we're shooting like a 16-hour day. Everybody's exhausted. They're like, there's some like karate fight scene between like vampire women or something. It's like, all right, cut, cool, I think we're done. But no, we'll do it one more time. It's like, why? What's the matter now? Oh, can you do it? And the one girl, she's like basically ready to collapse. She's got her head like on the hero guy actor's back, and she's like ready just to fall asleep. She's like, make it more sexy. He's like, yeah. It's like everybody's like, oh, grown, that's it. We're out of here, done. I don't want to mention it by name because it gives him too much credit. So. And everybody said behind the scenes DVD, that would have been the actual selling point of this movie. The movie itself, nobody cares about that. It's kind of like, what was the documentary? American Movie, where they're following Mark Borchardt around and stuff while he's trying to make Coven and stuff. Mm-hmm. And just all these mishaps behind the scenes that is absolutely fascinating to watch. And it's much more interesting than the actual movie that he's making when you see the actual movie. I mean, I love the actual movie, but obviously the behind the scenes was the fascinating part. Just like, wow. What was the other one? Overnight.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say Overnight. That's another one where the guy was trying to make Boondock Saints. Actually, I just watched that yesterday. I haven't seen that for a while. That's another one I could just watch over and over. Just all these mishaps with this guy, and the movie's not getting made, and Harvey Weinstein is basically shutting him down out and chasing him out of Hollywood and all this. And, you know, it's quite a film if you've never seen it.
I haven't. There's another film that's coming out. I think it's still in pre-production, if I'm not mistaken. And I had another person that was in the film, Rebecca Reinhart. I had her
she's
on
horrible.
The show.
Oh, did you hear that? Jesus. No.
a few Star days ago, she was on the show.
I know,
and
I heard
the movie
her.
Is Sharkago, like Chicago, like
there
Chicago.
There you go.
Yeah.
that whole thing just came out of a goof. I was working on a screenplay for basically it's kind of like a Pulp Fiction action drug kind of movie thing that takes place over Chicago. And I usually bring like a tablet or a laptop with me and stuff. And I'll go sit at the bar so I can just sit there and write dialogue and whatnot. And of course, the more I drink, the worse the dialogue gets. And then I end up like playing Candy Crush or on Facebook or one of the two. And I said, somebody had commented, I don't remember what that was, but I said, you know, we should do like a shark comedy or whatever that takes place like in Lake Michigan. And I got up, got another beer. And when I sat down, I'd already had like 74, 75 likes on it. People were sending me messages, oh, are you doing the casting for this yet? People said, hey, you know what, I do special effects. I want to build your shark. And I'm like, it was just a goof. You know, it wasn't supposed to be serious. But sure enough, everybody keeps asking, what's going on with the shark movie? What's going on with the shark movie? Because if I said I was making like a romantic comedy, everybody would be like, oh, that's great, Chris. Good luck with that. You say shark or zombie, and everybody falls over themselves and suddenly get involved. People are insane. So it's like, all right, so basically I kept thinking, okay, how do you put a shark in Lake Michigan? And I was like, okay, well, there's only one shark that can go from saltwater to freshwater and back, and that's the bull shark. It's like, okay, well, that answers that question. So now I'm trying to find excuses that I can't, that there's no way this could possibly happen. And it's like, oh, well, the shark hunter guy has to come from South America for whatever the hell reason. and stuff. It's like, yeah, but how are you going to get from like South America into Lake Michigan with a boat? Oh no, that's easy. You go through the Strait of St. Lawrence going from Canada. And it's like, son of a bitch. Yeah, okay, that's checked off the list. And every time I keep trying to find excuses and I can't do this, like, no, everything is possible. It's just like, it's like finally I'm like basically stuck having to do this. Again, I made Gone with the Wind back to back with like Citizen Kane. First thing out of everyone's mouth would be, oh, so what's going on with the shark movie? You know, nobody cares. It's just, oh, the shark movie. That's going to be awesome. So everyone, is it going to be like Sharknado? It's like, no, nothing like that, you know, because I mean, that's just stupid cameos with like bad CGI. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. The idea behind it was kind of funny, but the movie itself was just, not a fan. So I want to do like an actual serious horror movie with a lot of comedic elements, kind of like Shaun of the Dead is to zombie movies, you know? I mean, it's still a horror movie at the basis of it, but again, there are ridiculous characters and stuff, and that's what makes it fun in between. So
yeah.
I want to do something like that. It's like, all right, I think I've got all the ideas down. I've got a lot of these scenes typed up and whatnot, and it's like, yeah, they're pretty ridiculous and stuff, but I mean, they're not over-the-top stupid. Like, people are going to be looking at the camera like, oh, it's a joke. You get it? Because I think that kind of takes people out of the movie when your actors do that. They break that fourth wall. It's like, suddenly it's not funny anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I've got, again, who knows when we're actually going to be able to start that. Hopefully this summer with this whole COVID thing kind of gets vaccinated or whatnot and everybody can get back to normal life again. If making sharks movies in Lake Michigan is normal, I guess, but. So I've got like lots of supplies on there.
I hope that you're able to. Go ahead.
Me too. I want people to stop bugging me about it. I was building a life-size shark, and like every night I have to pull all the furniture out of the dining room because it was the only room in the house that had enough space where I could lay out all these materials to start building this stupid thing. And then I was like, you know what? What am I going to do with this once the movie is shot? I have nowhere to store like this gigantic life-size shark. So I figured this might be the greatest... This might be the greatest incentive of all, like on any Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign and stuff. Like everybody who donates a dollar, you know, I put your name in the credits just for a dollar, you know what? Hey, because you contributed. You deserve to have your name in the movie. You know, I don't do the social media shout outs. I think that's silly. But I figured, hey, everybody, for every dollar they spend, I will write their name down and stuff as raffle tickets. And after the movie is done and shot, I will pull a name out of the hat or whatnot. And whoever's name I pull gets to win the life-size shark. But I figured this would be the easiest way to make the budget for this. Because, you know, somebody somewhere wants to have a life-size shark in their house for whatever the hell reason. I'm sure it'll end up in somebody else's movie. I'm sure somebody will get a divorce or something over when the shark will be named in it and stuff. Like, yeah, then, when he brought home the life-size shark to put in the dining room and stuff, the honeymoon was over. I got nowhere to keep it. I'm not going to use it again.
Yeah, that would probably work because, like you say, people would. There's somebody somewhere that would want it.
People aren't saying that.
I don't have my own yard, so I wouldn't want it because I live in a townhouse that I rent, so I can't put stuff like that out of my yard. Even though I have a little bit of a yard that I'm allowed to like plant stuff in, I'm not allowed to put stuff like that out there.
You'd probably meet a whole lot of your neighbors real quick if you did. I'm sure if I put a shark out on my front lawn, like for Halloween or something, I mean, it wouldn't just be the neighborhood kids would be over here like taking pictures with a stupid thing. It's just like, all right, it would have to go somewhere.
Well, I might get away with it on Halloween, which Halloween is over, so it would have to be, you know, like next Halloween.
Well, I'm pretty sure nobody has a shark on the lawn for Halloween. I mean, you have skeletons or ghosts, but nobody. I've never seen a shark on somebody's lawn.
Me either.
Well, hopefully,
so,
I will.
I might get away with it then, but that would be the only time because they do allow us to put stuff out on Halloween. As long as it doesn't like flash, they don't like us to use flashing stuff, and unless it's like pointed at your own door, you can do it then. But yeah, like if it flashes out towards the other areas, you're not allowed to do that. And I understand it because it can be disconcerting for somebody that's like just happens to be walking by and all of a sudden stuff is flashing at them. You know. So yeah. So there's a few things you're not allowed to do.
Wow.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying, yeah, get like an epilepsy fit or something with flashy lights. But
well,
I didn't
yeah,
just know
it. That's a you know, that's a real possibility too. So I understand that kind of stuff. But as far as just having stuff sitting out there, they really don't care what you put out there as long as it's not, you know, gross, like, you know, something that's naked, because there's lots of kids around here. And or, you know, people having sex and stuff like that. No,
we're going to have to test this. We're going to have to send the shark out by you. See how it goes over.
But the shark, as long as it's not blinking, yeah, I'd be able to.
I don't know. The sharks blink. I haven't looked that up. But maybe this will be finally be the thing that gets me out of this movie. Oh, sharks don't blink. Oh, never mind. I can't make this movie now. Just everybody, their mom keeps asking me. No, so how is the shark movie coming along, Christopher? But, oh, Jesus, your mom knows.
Oh, excuse me. Well, tell us about this other film. I'm sorry, what?
No, I was going to say, I was really getting into the whole shark thing and writing that when the whole pandemic hit and everything got shut down. It's like, okay, well, I can't work on the current movie, Steal Your Face, right now, because basically everybody's kind of quarantined off into their own little sections and whatnot. Stuff,
right.
And trying to get people together. Like, okay, because, I mean, nobody knew what was going on with it or how it spread or any of this stuff. So it's like, all right, fine, you know, so I've got downtime right now. I mean, I'm just editing the footage I've already shot, working on the soundtrack music. And it's like, yeah, you know what, I'm starting to get more and more into the stupid shark idea, so work more on the script than that. It's like, you know what, this would actually work if I really wanted to do this, which I still kind of don't, but I don't think anyone's going to let me rest until I deliver a shark movie, no matter how good or bad.
Speaking of blinking sharks, I saw this movie, and I don't even recall the name of it because I didn't see the beginning of it, and I saw it on cable, and I'm not able to, like, use the I can use the rewind, but not when something that's on. What I'm trying to say is it was live, so I couldn't rewind it because of that reason. Now, if it was that I was on demand, yes, I could use the rewind. But because it was on live, I couldn't do that. So I have no idea what the name of the movie was. But the shark in it was blinking. It was like, because they had put stuff in it so that they could control it, and the thing would be blinking. And it actually was pretty funny. It wasn't supposed to be. It was one of those movies that it was supposed to be really serious and really scary. But it was so funny that I just laughed through the whole thing, because every time they showed the shark's face and then they showed the side of it, it was blinking these red and green and different colored lights. And I was like,
oh,
that's so funny.
Was it shark exorcisms? I've pretty much seen every shark movie that's ever been made in like the last like year and a half. Like, no matter how good or bad, it's like, okay, the good, of course, being Jaws, the bad being everything else. So.
Well, I had a guest on my show, Madeline Deering, and she's like this really big shark aficionado, and so we were talking about shark films through most of her show.
Oh,
and
I know.
Part
of that Facebook, I think, because of the shark movie. I think she's friends with Rebecca. Rebecca said something about the shark. Oh, you were going to be in a shark movie? And Madeline and I are now friends on Facebook. I don't think we've ever spoken before, but we are Facebook friends.
Aww.
If that counts for anything.
Well,
I'm going to have to send her an apology.
Because there's a lot of people on Facebook that, you know, I don't interact that much with, even though I'm friend, quote-unquote friends with them. But then there's other ones mm-hmm. that Yeah, it's just like actually in real life that you meet people and, like, say you're at work and there's some that, yes, you're friendly with them because you're working with them, but you're not really friends with them. But then you have other people that you are actually friends with. And Facebook works basically the same way. They're on your friends list, and you're not really friends, but you're cordial, and there's somebody you can talk to and see what's going on in their life. And then there's and then there's other ones that you really do become friends with. And I know of people that have met and married people that they met on Facebook. So there you go.
I've got so many jokes I could throw in right now, but I'm gonna hold back.
Well, if you want, it's your show. If you want to use your time to tell jokes about Facebook, go ahead. It's your show.
I'm not gonna... It's been a long day. I'm not going full Don Rickles.
We'll get back to a movie now, I guess. What about Grave Robbers from Outer Space? What's going on with that one?
That's basically sitting in mothballs right now. I started that maybe 10 years ago. It's going to be my serious, like, dark... reimagining, remake. Again, is there really a difference between the two? A Plan 9 from Outer Space, because I used to be on a film site called BeIndependent.com and stuff, and one of the topics on there was, if you could remake any movie, what would you remake? And I said, I'd like to do Plan 9 from Outer Space. And everybody's like, why would you want to do that? So I was like, it had an interesting premise that was actually pretty cool, zombies and aliens and whatnot and stuff. It was just executed horribly that it became one of these so bad it's good movies, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's still bad, but it's enjoyable because of it. And I thought about it. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'd actually like to attempt that, you know, make it just like a dark, creepy kind of zombie and a lot of alien stuff going on. And everybody said, that's the best idea I've ever heard. You know, good luck with that. And on the flip side, there are a lot of people said, dude, that is the worst idea I've ever heard. But good luck with that. I'd still like to see it, you know. So we started shooting that. I did the fundraiser thing for it. This is why I kind of keep away from these now, because the movie didn't get completed. There was just all kinds of problems with locations and actors. And basically, the money kind of dried up on it before it ever got finished. So it's still kind of in limbo. I still have all the footage that I shot, which is maybe about two-thirds of it or so, maybe a bit less, depending on what I want to do. And all the footage is there, and this is one of these movies I'd love to get back to at this point, because it was pretty much shot in segments that if any of the actors like bailed on me or had to get replaced or whatever, it wouldn't be that big a deal, because we've already shot all the segments with that particular character that was needed. So I could always just get new people to do these other scenes. So this is kind of like, it still hangs over my head and haunts me that this movie's never gotten completed and put out there yet. Especially because I still owe DVDs to all these people. Put up the money for it in the first place. It's like, but like everything, all the special effects, makeup stuff costed a whole hell of a lot more than I thought it would cost. Cause I actually had a makeup effects guy who was actually doing all this stuff rather than me just like coming up with, here, you can just use flour and water and stuff. And it's like, no, that's not going to work. What do you want to do? And basically, yeah, it's like, yeah, when I got the bill for all the special effects stuff, it's like, fantastic. That's pretty much everything that I raised. It's like, yeah. So a lot of that stuff is still going into other movies right now, Steal Your Face included. But it's one of these movies, like, yeah, I got to get back to that and finish that one of these days, just because people still ask about it. But once they heard a shark movie, it's like, yeah, everybody kind of forgot about everything else and lost their minds because, could I be in the shark movie? And basically, it's like, yeah, every woman I know now, I said, hey, you know, can I put you in a bikini and get eaten by a shark? Oh, that'd be awesome. And I'm thinking, if it was that easy, why didn't I come up with the idea when I was like 18 years old? I could have just had everybody I know in bikinis, and it would have been great, you know? But no, everybody's down for it, no problem. And I think, again, this is another one of the scientific facts. I was like, because the movie's supposed to take place over a time period of a week. I'm thinking, how much does one shark eat in a week anyway? You know, I mean, I got a lot of people lined up that this thing's supposed to eat, you know? And I'm thinking, maybe it just takes like an arm or a leg here or something. It doesn't really fill up on anybody. Maybe If I can get away with it that way.
Well, if you're ever in Ohio and you need an old lady walking with a cane that gets eaten by a shark,
I'm holding you to
it. I can be your old lady.
There we go. You know, I'm going to bring that shark out there to you, and I'm going to leave it on your front lawn when I come back to Chicago. And I'm not going to take your call. Chris, go pick up your damn shark. I'm sorry, I don't know who this is. Please stop calling me.
Yeah, and what I would say to the landlord, hey, what are you doing with a shark on your lawn? There's a shark on my lawn.
He'd be one of those guys who probably loves it too.
Like, how could a shark be on my lawn? Because I'm good at that, playing like I don't know what's going on. And then I'd come to the door and I'd be looking like, oh, there is a shark out there.
Me too. I was married once. I don't know what you're talking about, me. Huh? I was all my time. I wasn't drunk. Must just probably just didn't see me.
Oh, excuse me. Well, there's only a few minutes left, like 3.5 minutes. So usually near the end, I ask the guest if they like people to contact him. And I always, after I had one guest, said, I don't want people to contact me. And he was actually, you know, not nasty, but he was like, I should never have asked him because he doesn't want people to contact him. So I was like, okay, that's fine with me. I don't care. But if you want people to contact you, how would you like them to contact you?
Carrier pigeon. The less chance of hearing from them. Smoke signals, psychic messages. I don't know. Because all they're going to ask now is, oh, so what's going on with the shark movie? That's all anybody ever asks. I've had people contact me on Facebook ask, oh, have you shot this yet and stuff? Oh, I'd love to be in this and stuff. I took an acting class when I was in high school. Or I said, I don't care. Dude, the whole movie's supposed to be a joke anyway. You think I'm flying you in here so you can be in a shark movie and stuff? There's a lot of indie local things that do that stuff. Hey, you know what? You can get killed in the movie for $500 or whatever the hell, you know what? I mean, people will put up with people who can't act or whatever as long as they throw the money down. So, I don't know. Maybe this is the way to go. Everything else seems to be falling in place with this stupid movie. I have no idea why.
Well, with doing a lot of the stuff remotely, there's been even more of that because they can film it at home and you don't even need to do anything as a film, well, other than incorporate it into your film. But as far as filming it and all that other stuff, you don't need to do it because the other person is filming their part. And then you put it into the film.
I told my assistant camera guy, Rob, kept telling him, he's like, dude, you got to make this movie. Now everybody wants this. I was like, no, I don't want to do this. And I said, you know what, I'll do it. Stuff, everything else keeps, everything, all signs keep pointing to yes on this. I said, I'm going to ask for like $1 million on Indiegogo or something. He's like, you do realize you'll get like $3 million then, right? I said, yeah, but you know what, I don't want to make this stupid movie. It's just, it's goofy. It's just ridiculous. And people aren't going to let up until I do it. So much peer pressure out there. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to say about my feelings or my thoughts on the shark movie.
Yeah, well, shark movies are popular. I mean, I like them. I'm not, like, a big shark movie watcher, but I do like watching them, especially when they're funny, when they're not supposed to be.
Well, again, it's supposed to be a horror movie and stuff. That's my main goal on this here. But, again, there's ridiculous characters. They have ridiculous motives. The shark hunter guy, this was one of the things. It's like, okay, why would somebody have to come back from South America to Chicago every year? I'm thinking, what is the one thing you can get in Chicago you can't get anywhere else on the planet? And it hit me, because, of course, I do all my writing when I'm sitting at bars most of the time. It's Malort. It's a liqueur. It's world known as just being absolutely horrible. But, like, 99.8% of it is sold in Cook County, which is Chicago, because it's a local thing, and other people have never heard of it. So I contacted them and said, okay, you know what, that'll be my get-out-of-jail-free card. I'll tell them and stuff that, hey, you know what, the guy's supposed to come back for Malort and stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't really want to make this movie. And the guy hit me up like 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh, give me a call. It's like, now it's 2 in the morning. He's like, yeah, right away. So I called him up and I explained. It's like, yeah. So my plot point is that this guy, the shark hunter guy, has to come back to Chicago once a year to restock on Malort. And he's like, I love the idea. Anything at all you need from us, let us know. I was like, oh my God, somebody just tell me no already, please. Oh yeah, they're all
okay,
in.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but if I didn't, Blog Talk Radio would just cut you off anyway without warning you. So we're about ready to get cut off. So I wanted to thank you very much for being on the show, and I wish you very much success in the future. And stay safe, and goodbye.
All right. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.